Hello and welcome to the Context Machine. This is episode number 588. Didn't actually prepare a script for me or Jeff because that's how we roll sometimes. I'm Brian Chaffin.
I don't have a script. I don't know who I am. We are flying by the seat of our pants.
Jeff Gamet. Jeff Gamet.
I am Jeff Gamet.
There you go.
And I am so excited to be here today. Brian.
Yeah.
Do we have a sponsor?
We do.
Oh my gosh. Tell me who.
LinkedIn Jobs. I'm going to tell you about them later. We have our website up at contextmachine.io, and you can use that to reach out to us, or you can hit us over on Twitter at contextmachine. And we're super, listen, we're recording this a little bit late this week because I had a last second trip to go visit my daughter in Las Vegas, and I drove, and did I tell you about my dog? You know I have a dog.
Well, yes, yes, I know about Ichabod, your business partner.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. He does not like cars. He doesn't like anything new. I got him during the pandemic, and apparently we just didn't go do enough things. So
interesting. Yeah, because I always think of dogs as your buddy. That it's like you go out to the car, and they don't care what this thing is. They just want to get inside with you.
Yeah. Yes. And that's usually been my experience with dogs, and including the previous lab that I had. Ichabod does not like being in the car at all. He doesn't want to get into it. He'll sploot. It's where he goes flat on the ground and spreads his legs out.
Where they become a non-Newtonian fluid. Yep.
Yes. And he won't try to jump. Like, even if I can get him in a calm state where he's not splooting, he won't try to jump in. And then once we actually get in the car, he stress pants the whole time. It's not heat. It's like he's stressed out.
The stress, yeah.
And so, a 9-hour trip to, it's normally about 7.5, but because I was making extra stops for him, a 9-hour car trip, he was kind of a wreck. So, anyway, just got back from that. And he did better on the return home, the return trip.
Poor Ichabod. When I think about it from a dog's perspective, what is this devilry that's going on where you put him in this box and you sit with him and now the world is spinning and flying past out of control while you're just sitting there? Insanity is that?
I wonder if, like, so interestingly, he has never once stuck his nose out the window. So he's never gotten that orgasmic blast, right?
Can you blame him? I mean, that's
one
just,
thing that a lot of dogs like about traveling in a car.
Yes, that's true. But from his perspective as a non-traveler, I mean, that's like leaning into a proton beam. Why would you do that?
It's an ongoing project because I want to be able to take him, all the places that it's appropriate to take him. And, I want him to be my travel buddy. Mm-hmm. So we are an ongoing project in terms of that. If any of our listeners have any guidance, techniques or, for better acclimating him and wanting him to be in the car, I'd love to hear it. Love to hear it. You can reach out to me on the Twitter at GeekTells, TELLS. Write us at Context Machine 2 or our website, contextmachine.io. Are you on Twitter? I forget.
Which one's Twitter? Is that the one where I'm at Jay Gamet?
That's the one that has been saved from being saved. Maybe. Unless a lawsuit makes the save. Anyway.
I see what you did there. For the record, I'm not an Elon fan.
I am an Elon Musk admirer in terms of his intellect and what he's accomplished and what he has done. I am not a fan of a lot of his philosophy. I am not a fan of his hypocrisy. Like, for instance, like pooping on government or pooping on government subsidies when government subsidies helped make Tesla what it is today, that hypocrisy just drives me bananas. And what I really wish he would do, Jeff, I wish he would go and solve desalinization. Go do that. Don't need you to say free speech, because you don't quite understand what free speech actually is. Go solve desalinization. I think he'll
solve that in the same way that he solved respirators for COVID patients early in the pandemic, which is to not do it.
Well, but he has done a lot of things. Did you hear
what he did for that?
No, I did not. Do tell.
Okay, so he promised all of these respirator machines for all these hospitals.
Yeah, I knew that.
He did was he bought up a bunch of CPAP machines, you know, for like people with sleep apnea.
Yeah.
And put like Tesla stickers on the shipping crates or something, and just sent CPAP machines to hospitals. And they're like, "What are we supposed to do with this? These are worthless to us."
Huh.
I think he's very good at being a marketing guy. He can create a reality distortion field like Steve Jobs did.
The boring machine. But
Steve Jobs was able to actually follow through and produce. And
so is he. I have all kinds of problems with Elon Musk. I have major problems with him complaining about California when California made him. That, again, that hypocrisy drives me nuts. I have major problems with him moving his corporation to Texas after Texas passed some astoundingly bad legislation, which to me says he agrees with that legislation. I have major problems with this guy, but he has accomplished all kinds of amazing things. The Boring Company is amazing. SpaceX is amazing. Tesla is amazing.
Yeah, and I look at all these things and SpaceX and Tesla. I look at these and I think he did a really good job of buying companies.
Oh, I think it's grossly unfair.
Was the guy that was able to like really make the marketing happen and really get people into what was going on. And but as far as is Elon Musk an innovator?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think so.
Absolutely,
I think he is not.
The facts do not back that up. Reality does not back that up.
Like, I'm going to let your reality get in the way of my opinion.
All fair. So today, we're going to talk about another completely uncontroversial concept that won't turn anybody off.
Perfect.
sponsored by LinkedIn Jobs. Let's see here. We're going to talk a little bit about NFTs today. Now, we've talked about NFTs in the past. By the way, we were going to come up with the second topic, and then we never did.
I can't wait to see what we come up with, or if we even need it.
Top men. We are going to... This is sparked in part with conversation that I had when I was visiting with my daughter about NFTs being valid or not valid, and as well as an NFT project that I'm really interested in and that I just sort of want to like talk about because I'm just like obsessed with it. But there's a sort of... There is both a bunch of nonsense out in the NFT world, and there's also a lot of nonsense, misinformation, and misunderstanding outside of the NFT world about NFTs. And I thought maybe we could talk about that.
I think that sounds great because I'm with you. I mean, I'm reading news stories basically daily that are talking about NFT scams or people that spend thousands of dollars on an NFT and then it gets stolen from them and they have no recourse or apparently no recourse. And yet you see all of this really interesting art coming out of this and people bagging on it. And it's, I mean, from the perspective of someone who's just trying to figure out what all of this is, the information that's available, this is just a hot mess for the average person like me. You, on the other hand, are not an average person. And so you know a lot more about the NFT space and what's going on.
Well, yeah, I know at least enough to get myself into trouble, for sure. And hopefully I can
That's enough to call you a professional.
Excellent.
And an expert in my book.
Excellent. That's good. So, I mean, the first thing is, like, at its core, the most dismissive way to look at an NFT is to, like, you know, say that you're buying a $12,000 JPEG.
Yeah, I see that in articles all the time.
Which is,
why would you spend $12,000 on a JPEG
that can be copied endlessly?
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's something I see in the articles all the time too. What? Okay, Brian. Why would I spend $12,000 on a JPEG that anyone could copy?
Because the thing about NFTs are, well, there's, okay, a thing about NFTs is that that through the blockchain concept, which NFTs are based on, ownership of that $12,000 JPEG can actually be proved. So when it comes to something like, for instance, one of the things you sort of alluded to, but not by name, was Seth Green from, you know, Buffy, and he's Chris on Family Guy, and he is one of the principals behind Robot Chicken. And
Stupid Monkey Studios.
Is it?
I am 99.8% sure.
Seth Green's production company. I think it's Buddy. Yeah, it's Stupid Buddy Studios. STOOPID.
Oh, well, then why do they always do the monkey with it?
I think that's formerly Stupid Monkey. It was originally Stupid Monkey.
Okay, so I accept your apology.
Yes, you actually have it this time.
but then on the other side of it, I had no idea that they had changed the name to Stupid Betty.
Right, that's fair, and I'd actually forgotten that they were once Stupid Monkey, obviously.
This is why we make a great team, because between the two of us, we can probably cobble together enough of the information to make it sound like we know what we're talking about.
Yes, we can. Let's go with that. So, Seth, I kind of mentioned this because I actually heard someone talking about this, saying that, like, no one even knows who Seth Green is anymore. It's like, yeah, he's Chris on Family Guy, and he has this production company making all these hit shows. So, yeah, people do know who he is. But regardless, he had a Bored Ape Yacht Club stolen from him. And that Bored Ape, which is, let me actually get the number on it. It's Bored Ape. Maybe we can include a link to it. It's Bored Ape 8398. Remind me to give you that link. I'll give you that link.
And hey, Brian, can you give me that link?
I can. As a matter of fact, I'm just going to get it right now so you can actually even see it, because that's how.
Yes, please.
That's how we
roll. And in the meantime, I'll say this whole Seth Green losing his NFT thing, that was big enough news that me, someone who's not in the NFT world, had heard about it. And the thing that I found interesting out of this, or at least raised questions for me, was he buys this thing with the intention of using it as a character in an animated series.
Yeah.
And then someone steals it.
And, yeah, he fell victim to a phishing scheme.
But he still has it. So he still has it.
Well, the rights actually go with the NFT. The rights go with the NFT.
Okay, so someone steals the rights to the NFT.
Well, okay. You're okay. A blockchain is, in essence, an open ledger, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've discussed this before, you and I?
Yes. Okay. So if we were to hop in the Wayback Machine and go to discussions that we've had about blockchain before, one of the things that I decided after learning about the whole open ledger and everything is that the people that have been saying this would be perfect for legal documents.
Yes.
Because Now you can keep track of all the legal documents.
Like titles.
I can see that for contracts, but you can never ever use this for keeping track of legal documents in court. You know, let's say you have a criminal court, and so you have all the court cases stored in the blockchain, and now they're all verifiable, and you can keep track of the case outcome. If you have a sealed case, you can't have it on the blockchain. And if it's an expunged case, you can't do an expunged case.
Yeah, you could design a blockchain for that though.
But you can't, because there'd be a record of the record being expunged. And when you expunge your record, it is just gone. It's from a legal standpoint, it never happened.
But for you could,
which
at
means
least
it couldn't have been in the blockchain.
You could. Well, it depends on. You could design a blockchain to handle sealed cases.
Yes, you're right. You could do that.
You could also design a blockchain for things to be expunged. That could be done too. The problem is that there would be definitely a copy of that record, but. And the difference between that and what we have now is that while there are going to be people who know about the case that was expunged, mm-hmm. their reach is limited. And with a digital record, that's not necessarily the case, especially if someone is making a copy of it as you go, which is possible.
With expunged records, it matters from the legal side, because let's say there was a case that's ultimately expunged, but there was news coverage of it at the time.
Yeah.
The news coverage, the records of that, that's all still out there. And you can't make that go away. But from the legal side, it's critical that if something's expunged, that the records of that, it's just gone. Because that's the purpose of it. From a legal aspect, it never happened.
Okay, but if that was the case with the blockchain, that would be the case.
There's a record. Yeah, but there's a record of it never happening.
Not if there was a mechanism for removing it from the blockchain.
But there'd be a record of it being removed from the blockchain.
But there wouldn't necessarily be any record of it of what was removed. Just case XXXX.
See, and to me, that doesn't work with expunging.
All right, fair enough. So yeah. Rabbit but hole anyhow, aside, right, I hear what you're saying, and certainly
and
smarter people
that
than
we
us.
Need two subjects for today.
Smarter people than us are going to have to solve that particular issue.
So I just took care of it. I saved everyone a bunch of money. Anyhow, Seth Green, blockchain.
When you own an NFT, hold on, Jeff. We're going to get carried away. So let's talk about LinkedIn jobs. Hiring is hard, right? Right now hiring is really hard. Like there is the labor market right now is tight, and finding the right people is important. Finding the right people fast, being able to interview the right people efficiently. All these things are very important. If you are a person who hires folks, and that's where LinkedIn jobs comes in. So first of all, we know that LinkedIn is this massive network. Their marketing materials tell me that there's 810 million people on LinkedIn, 810 million people on LinkedIn, all organized around, professions, around working, around, social networking that is essentially professionally related. And LinkedIn jobs lets you post a job opening in front of that massive network of 810 million people. You can also add your purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile. That'll help spread the word that you're hiring so that your personal network can help you find the right people to hire. That's handy. They have simple tools like screening questions. And screening questions make it easy to essentially focus on the right candidates that have the right skills and experience so that you can quickly prioritize who you would like to interview and possibly hire. And the thing that I like most about LinkedIn Jobs is the dashboard. The dashboard lets you manage your job postings. It lets you manage your potential candidates. It lets you manage everything from a very simple and easy to use interface. And if you know, I contrast that with the days of, you know, like having paper applications and actually needing to like keep everything organized. I mean, that's something that's very hard for me. So LinkedIn Jobs can help you do all this very easily, very efficiently, and it's a great tool for hiring people. And in addition to all that, did you know that every week nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? That's 40 million job seekers visiting LinkedIn. You can post your job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. That's linkedin.com/ACM to get your job for free. As always, terms and conditions apply. So a smart contract for an NFT project may have been written in such a way as to give you certain rights, or it may not have been written that way. It may have been written in a way that where the creator retains all rights. So you should always actually check and see, like, I mean, depending on what your interests are, you should check and see what you're getting involved in. But with the case of, and we can actually see all this because it's open. Where is...
Well, that's convenient.
Yeah. So with Sassy, details, contract, Bored Ape Yacht Club collection, blah, blah, blah. Oh, I can't
remember. Top
man. Can't remember where they put this. But with the case of the Bored Ape Yacht Club, the owner of the NFT actually has the rights to that NFT. And that's what Seth Green was going to use and why he was going to use it. As the basis of a show. And then when he fell for a phishing attack, someone was able to get into his wallet and steal four of his NFTs, one of which was this Bored Ape Yacht Club. And as a history, 2 months ago, how much did it go for? He paid 106 Ethereum, which at the time was probably close to $300,000. I know it. And I think he bought it originally.
My choking was the price.
There have been Bored Apes that have sold for a lot more than that.
I know. Still, holy crap. That's a lot of money regardless.
He originally got it from Steve Aoki. I don't know if you ever heard of him. He has kind of a reputation of getting involved in projects that don't do well, but he bought it from that person for 27.75 Ethereum originally. And then he had to pay 105 to get it back. So that's pretty cool, huh?
Isn't Steve Aoki in the middle of another crypto thing that's imploding in a massive way right now?
Yeah. I don't want to besmirch him because I haven't done a ton of research on this, but... Yeah. So, long story short, with an NFT, you can actually prove who owns it for good or for ill.
Okay.
So if I steal it from you, I own it. Unless you can somehow get some kind of law enforcement to, you know, actually pursue charges against me. And I mean, that's like a sort of gift and a curse, right? For the NFT world. But that's
okay. Yep.
That's one of the reasons why these $12,000 JPEGs, and by the way, they may cost a dollar, you know, depends on the NFT project. There's thousands of them. The Bored Ape Yacht Club is the most successful one that's out there, but there are many of them and they might have all kinds of costs. But by sort of $12,000 JPEG reference is just, you know, as a sort of anchoring reference. If you can have a copy of my NFT, but I own it. It is up to you to decide whether or not that means anything. I mean, mind you, if you tried to use my NFT for something, I would be able to sue you because I do own the rights to it, depending on the NFT. But it is up to you to decide whether or not that has any value.
Okay. So, all right. So let's say that you have an NFT and I managed to get a hold of a copy of the file, this graphic. And I'm thinking, man, this ape would look awesome on my wall. I'm going to have it printed and framed and put it on my wall. And so I do that. Am I correct in assuming, unless I tell you that I've done this, you'll never know?
Yeah, I would never know
that I did that.
And unless you or someone who saw it told me. That's
okay.
That's for sure. Now, here's the thing. What I said, that it's up to you to decide whether or not that has value, and that's literally true. So, to a large extent, by the way, I should also add that an NFT can be any kind of digital asset. It could be video, could be a song, could be a sound, you know, just a recording of a sound. It could be, I know that I think the NBA was selling like clips, or maybe ESPN was selling clips, famous clips of old games as NFTs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whatever.
Okay.
It could be any kind of digital asset that is this NFT. It doesn't have to be a $12,000 JPEG. And I know someone, matter of fact, that this NFT project that I'm obsessed with currently, which is Apes, AIPES. I'll tell you a little more about it in a bit. But one of the members made a song about chilling with the apes, and he sells that as an NFT. So you could go buy a copy of a song, and you could copy that song and give it to whomever you wanted if you were to so choose, but doing so would not be right. But whatever, that's not the point either. The point is that... Boy, I feel like I'm making another edit point for myself.
You know, top men. Rewind. Top men.
Yeah, get the rights. Get the... Oh! So the thing is that whether or not you're just talking about a $12,000 JPEG, it may be that there needs to be something else with the project to give it value to you. With the Bored Ape Yacht Club, what you're really buying is access to other people who have bought Bored Apes. And what that means is access to celebrities, access to people with money, access to actual yacht clubs and private parties. Like there are events and places that you cannot get into unless you own a Bored Ape. And that's why... That's what you're paying for. So there's a utility value associated with ownership that is essentially separate from the art itself.
So, okay. So let's say I decide to buy a Bored Ape.
Yeah.
And now I've got this thing. And
you're like $60,000 or $70,000 less liquid. Go ahead.
Right, because hey, why not just throw that money around like a crazy guy? But so I've got this thing, and so I've got a piece of art, a digital file, but I've also bought myself into a club.
Yes,
like a literal club.
Yes,
and so that gets me access to like special parties and stuff. Well, then how do I prove that? Do I show up with my laptop and say here's my NFT, or do I put it on like a little placard hangs on a lanyard around my neck?
So I won't pretend. I mean, I don't own a Bored Ape. So I've never been to one of their events.
Why are we even having this discussion, Brian? I thought you were the expert.
I am the expert. I've never been to one of their events. I don't know how they handle actual ownership. However, there are ways. There are various services where you can prove your ownership by connecting your wallet and you know, and that service basically verifies that you actually own some particular NFTs. And I'm assuming that they're using various versions of that. Plus, at some point, people know that Seth Green owns Bored Ape 8398.
Okay.
Which is fine if you're Seth Green. Not everybody is Seth Green. And there are a lot of Bored Ape holders who bought, you know, in the very early days when they were, you know, like a quarter of an Ethereum and not 100 Ethereum or, you know, 500 Ethereum. And they just have held on to it all this time, giving them both perceived value and actual value, but it's not a liquid value because all that value was held up in this NFT that they wouldn't realize unless they sold it. Right?
Okay. So I decided I'm done going to all of the exclusive parties because those people are just so blasé. And so I'm just going to sell my Bored Ape. Mm-hmm. And can I have someone just like give me dollars for it? Or do I have to use a cryptocurrency of some sort?
Yeah, you would need to. You could get, if someone would give you dollars, you could then send it to their wallet, to their crypto wallet. Mm-hmm. But all of the mechanisms for trading these things are through crypto assets.
Okay, so if you're going to get into NFT, you have to get into crypto also and understand both.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely and positively. Now, another thing, and we've mentioned the Huxley saga before. This is another kind of way where an NFT project might have some value. So with Huxley, you've got the digital graphic novels.
It's okay, yes. I was going to play straight man and set you up to say the other graphic novels. Okay. But Brian, Huxley? I'm not sure I remember that. What exactly is Huxley?
It's post-apocalyptic sci-fi, far future, different planet, graphic novel series with 6 issues, but they're all, and they're also a set of avatars, and Marvel is making a movie from the graphic novels. There's a first person shooter that's being made set in this universe. And it's a Web3 first person shooter. I'm not really sure how that's going to end up working. But it looks amazing. If you like first person shooters, and I'm not sure yet what else they're going to be doing, but there is a rather impressive and large team of heavyweights behind this. So what they have done is they have created an ecosystem of value. So yes, if you own some Huxley stuff, you have access to other Huxley holders just by sort of definition, but they're not throwing, well, they actually did throw some events at this NFT conference that was in New York in June where everybody got COVID, but that's another point. That's not their main focus. Their main focus is creating this content ecosystem. You know, there's the story in the graphic novels, there's the movie being made, there's the first person shooter, there's the avatars. And what you're doing by getting one of these NFTs is you're getting involved in that. You're getting involved in that content. You're buying into that content ecosystem. What we've discussed so far are two ways that NFTs can have value above and beyond a $12,000 JPEG. And the first one, again, is access. Some kind of utility value where holding a particular NFT allows you to do something that people who do not hold it cannot do. Right? Mm-hmm. Second way would be if there is some kind of ongoing ecosystem, a content ecosystem in particular is the thing that keeps springing to my mind, that can have value above and beyond the JPEG or even the PDF of the graphic novel. And then the third way to me, the third way that I've seen actually, and there's a fourth way too. So the third way that I've seen is when
and a maniacal devotion to the code
is when you're really interested in the art, which is why I am so obsessed with the Apes NFT project, AIPES. And that's because it's AI art versions, in this case, of the original Bored Ape art. And so what that really means is that it's machine learning, color and pattern matching that then applies that color and pattern matching to the original Bored Ape art to create these new versions of that original art. And I think it is gorgeous. Like some,
you have shown me some pretty cool pieces of art that are coming from the AI apes thing.
Yeah, apes. Let's call it apes.
Just call it apes. Okay. Brent, I have another question for you. Because I can see where people could get like really excited about some of the art they're seeing and the idea of there's the exclusivity and there's all these other things that could go along with the stuff that I'm buying. How do you know you're not getting scammed when you sign up and start buying these NFTs? And I'm asking because, I mean, like anyone can start doing this, really. Yeah. And I've seen news stories about how servers that were managing the
Discord servers usually. Or is that not what you mean?
No, that's not what I meant, but that's a really good thing too, because you can get in the Discord servers and have someone say, hey, buy this, and then they scam you. But I was thinking about how I read an article in the last few months where a bunch of people were left high and dry because the specific server that was maintaining the information about who owned which NFTs and whatever this NFT run was, they just disappeared. The servers were just gone. And
right.
Then no one had any way to prove ownership. And so they put all this money in buying these NFTs. And not only can they not show ownership, but now they have no way to sell them if they wanted to. So it's like their money's just gone.
Right. And unfortunately, this is a buyer beware thing. And in large, I think that with most NFTs, you shouldn't put any money into an NFT that you're not comfortable losing, and which is the same thing with any stock or any crypto for me. Mm-hmm. And I have a very high risk tolerance, and everything that I'm talking about is coming from that high risk tolerance viewpoint. So your mileage is going to vary, and your mileage probably should vary, and you should always be skeptical. And there are tons of scams. There's this whole concept of a rug pull where someone creates an NFT project, and then basically once they sell a certain, you know, certain amount of it, they just disappear. Like, mm-hmm. you know, and that's called a rug pull. And there's, you know, it's a running joke in the NFT world. This project that I'm obsessed with, Apes, the founder started off saying that it was a rug pull, and like she was constantly saying, like, don't buy this at the rug pull, don't buy this at the rug pull. And then, you know, as we've gone weeks and weeks and weeks of her just continuing to release amazing new content, amazing new art for this NFT mm-hmm. project, it has so far proven not to be a rug pull, but it may be a rug pull. We don't actually know. So there are scams.
It's a rug pull.
Yeah.
Just to make sure I'm understanding correctly, if it's a rug pull, you're paying money for this art. You're getting some art, but in the end, whoever's doing the rug pull would then just like close up shop, shut down the servers, and then that's it.
Yep.
And now you have that art.
Maybe
if you saved it. If you saved it. But you have no way of like reselling it because
or proving ownership, and that ownership probably has no value anyway. That's definitely possible. And then you've got also, you know, NFT projects that are started with the best of intentions, but by people who are in over their head, and so they didn't intend to rip you off, but they still collapse for some reason, or the project itself, like, you know, there's a lot of FOMO, fear of missing out. That happens in the mm-hmm. NFT world, and people buy into some project thinking that it's going to be, you know, a way for them to 10x their money, and then, you know, and then it collapses. That happens all the time. Like, I don't recommend that anyone get involved with NFTs unless they're super, super interested in it and willing to put in the time. And really, probably for most people, you just shouldn't get involved with NFTs in the first place. Because you've got the scam projects. You've got the projects that are not scams, but still fall apart. You've got the projects that are not scams, didn't fall apart, but then still end up having no value. I mean, there's thousands of NFT projects out there. And we're in a bear market in the crypto world in the first place. As we are recording this, we've experienced about a week of a rally, but you know who knows how long that'll last.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that can go wrong in the NFT world. There's a lot of things that have gone wrong in the NFT world, but there are some projects that just really excite me. I'm super excited about Huxley. I am obsessed with the art. I am obsessed with the art in the Apes project. I am very heavily involved in that community. We'll have a link to the both the project on OpenSea, which is the main market for NFTs, and then a link to the Discord server if you're interested. Discord server is a little bit wild, kind of crazy and kooky, and you know, it's got its own inbred community. Or I'm sorry, not community, inbred community. Well, they're gonna love me for saying that. It has its own inbred personality. Right. You know, with running jokes have been developing for weeks and weeks and weeks now.
Is there an NFT mafia that's going to show up at your door?
No. I'll just be harassed mercilessly for having said that. And there's this concept in the NFT world called copypasta, which is where you just sit there and paste this message that someone else sent at some point. It's insane, but it wouldn't surprise me if me having said that becomes a bit of copypasta lore, but I don't know, whatever. We'll see. So
you need to turn that into an NFT right now.
Sure. Let's do that. There's a fourth kind of NFT that has value above and beyond $12,000 JPEGs, and that's games. So if you've got some kind of game, be it a combat game or a racing game or whatever, and the characters that are used in the game are NFTs, then there's potential utility value there. And that potential utility value could just be in wins, right? Where your NFT fights other NFTs and you know, racks up a win-loss record. Or there could be prizes, you know, there could be actual money involved, or there could be like an NFT game could be set up to where people could wager on the outcome of a particular matchup. And the NFT holder might get a part of that prize pool.
Okay.
Baked into the smart contract, right? So where it happens automatically. Or your NFT might be able to reproduce, breed, whatever the mechanism is called, but to where
make baby NFTs.
Yes, make baby NFTs from your champion NFT, and those baby NFTs would have a higher chance of being, you know, of having some valuable trait in and of themselves. Right. And then you could then sell that baby NFT, or maybe even get some kind of royalty from any winnings that or any future sales. Oh, that's another thing about NFTs, is that the smart contract might include a royalty to the original creator every time it trades hands. So you, Jeff, you're an artist, right? We know that I can't, and don't even say it. But we know that I can't draw, but you were an artist. Now imagine if you created art and you sold that art and you got mm-hmm. money for that original sale. But now every time it trades hands, you get some percentage of that sale too, every single time. because there's a creator royalty baked into the smart contract that everybody knows about, or everybody should know about it if they actually looked at what they're doing. And I mean, like, think about that as an artist, Jeff. When has that ever been possible in the history of the world?
To the best of my knowledge, it hasn't been.
At least not enforceable.
You're saying artists, and at the same time, I'm thinking authors.
Yeah.
Used bookstores are, I love used bookstores. Absolutely love them. The problem is that once the book is sold the first time, regardless of many times it's sold after that, the author never sees any of the proceeds from the subsequent sales.
Right. And do you remember when the CD...
You could do that now.
In the music world tried to stop CDs from being sold because they weren't getting their cut from it. Do you remember that from the 90s?
I do remember. And they also tried to argue in court. Oh, no, of course not. Because screw those guys. I remember they also tried to argue in court that when we buy a CD, we're buying a license to play the content of that disc only in one place. So if I want to listen to Dark Side of the Moon at home, that's one CD. If I want to listen in my car, I have to buy a second CD.
I forgot about that argument.
And they tried to argue that with a straight face.
With a straight face, yeah. Yeah, and that's completely crazy. And of course, almost none of, even if they had won, almost none of that money would have been going to the bands, to the artists. It would have been going to the record labels.
Right, yeah.
So with NFTs, whoever created the project, now that may be an artist, or it may have been an artist for hire, or it may be an artist who has hired a team, right? It can go a million different ways, but the project creator can make the smart contract such that they get a piece of every subsequent sale. So every time it trades hands, they make some money. And that's fantastic.
It's fantastic. And at the same time, I can see where distributors would absolutely take advantage of the content creators. Like, let's use record labels as an example. They pay an artist for the music, and now they make the albums and sell the albums as NFTs, and it's the record label that's reaping the benefit of all the future sales. Okay. And the artist is not.
I'm going to do a poker no-no. And I'm going to see your raise and raise you. Because you can't do that. That's a string bet. Look.
Hold on. I need to take notes for stuff I have to look up after we're done.
My point is, you could be the artist, and you could release the album yourself as an NFT. Without going through a label. So like
NFT, self-publishing is definitely a thing now.
Self-publishing is a thing.
Yeah.
And I would imagine we're going to see more and more music released as NFTs. We'll probably even see more and more books released as NFTs. I that's certainly a possibility. Remains to be seen if it's going to catch on. But again, as an artist, as someone who has created art, you didn't know that about the creator royalty, right?
No.
When I said that to
but
you,
I do now.
Did your head kind of go like bang? I mean, was that like an eye-opening kind of concept for you?
Well, when you said it, like I immediately thought authors.
Huh? And you didn't think about yourself.
Yeah. Well, no, because I'm a selfless person like that. I was thinking of everyone else.
Okay, fair enough.
I was also thinking of from the perspective of, I do create art and...
But you've never made money from it.
No.
We did our Coffee is Jesus
stuff. Says a lot about my art.
We did a Coffee is Jesus series on Zazzle. And we didn't make any money. I don't think we had a single sale.
Well, But maybe we will now.
Maybe we could do Coffee is Jesus NFTs. Actually, we probably should. Don't tell anybody.
All right. My lips are sealed.
Excellent. Excellent. So again, games are the fourth way where an NFT might have value. Now, I mentioned the video game that was being made from the Huxley Project. And I think it's likely that having a robot avatar or human avatar, which are like, those are going to be released any day now, that's going to somehow help you or in the game, maybe give you some boosts, or like maybe you can just play your character in the game. I'm not sure yet how that's going to work out. The game is still in early development. I'm thinking more like there is a project that kind of imploded. So it's a funny example for me to use, but it was called Crypto Dragons. And
I wanted to ask you about that. So please continue.
Crypto Dragons. Are they still actually around? Let's see if they're still selling. I'm looking at it. The Crypto Dragons were, it was supposed to be a fighting game. They ended up having some technical problems. And I see that the floor price is now next to nothing. Is this the right one? I think this is not the real Crypto Dragons.
So the thing that I was thinking of, which is probably Crypto Dragons, NFT based, or a game that's using NFT. And so people are spending money buying characters and buying accessories and unlocking in-game things. And it's building up, and the game is in production, and then it's not. And so people have invested all this money in NFT content for a game, and the game doesn't happen, and so now they're just out all of that.
Yes, that is absolutely and entirely possible. I can't find the real, I don't know if the real Crypto Dragons is actually still here. That is entirely possible. And this is an unregulated area, and it is it's an area where you might have, again, you might have fraudsters, you might have people with the best of intentions who are incompetent or over their heads, which is the most likely, or just competent and filled with the best of intentions and good folks with a good project, and it just doesn't catch on. Like, all of these things are possible, but there is, I think, a large world of possibility and possibility and opportunity for making projects that actually matter and give people some kind of value above and beyond, way past just owning the JPEG.
All right. So,
or the movie or the song.
What we're talking about right now, it's like the wild, wild west for NFTs.
Yes. Yes.
And
except for people, people don't wear, black hats and white hats. Go ahead.
I mean, they could, but it wouldn't mean anything.
It wouldn't mean anything at all.
They just have a license for that hat. So why would the average person want to get involved in this?
The average person.
And as a follow-up to that, answer that, and then I'll ask the second half, because I probably need to change the question I'm going to ask based on your answer.
The average person probably shouldn't. So they need to be interested in what's going on. NFTs are probably never going to be a get-rich scheme for anybody. Way too many people think about it. There should be a reason why you are interested in an NFT project. For instance, I own a CryptoJig. And one of the reasons why I own a CryptoJig.
A what?
CryptoJig. It's a particular project. And it's a woman.
Oh, okay.
It's a woman-led project. And I wanted to support that, right? And it's a project where women are involved, and I wanted to support that as well, because, you know, the crypto space can often, many aspects of the crypto world are dominated by men. And so, you know, here was a project that had strong art. Have you seen Crypto Chicks?
No, I have not.
I'm going to send you that link. And I just love the idea of supporting this project that was being led by women and that had a lot of women that were involved in this space too. And that interested me. That was great. You should be interested in the utility that it brings you, like something like the Bored Ape Yacht Club, where you want access to those social circles, or you're interested in the story, like with Huxley Project, the Huxley Saga, or for me, mm-hmm. the Apes Project. The art is just phenomenal. We're going to include a couple of apes in the show notes. Is that okay?
Sure. Our show. Who's going to tell us no?
Should we include I want to actually embed a couple of images. Are you okay with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll have a couple of images of some of my favorite apes. And I own them. So, you know, I get to use them, and we'll link to the project too. I can do as I please. And we'll have a link to Crypto Chicks too. There's one called Scrimlins that I think they're these cute 3D kind of gremlin-y sort of, but owls figures. And that community is really interesting because they like that they act as if their scrimlins are real and spending time with them. It's not, I own a couple of scrimlins, but that's not my particular bag. Right. Uh-huh. But the people that do it are really interested in it, and more massive power to them. So there should be some kind of reason that you're getting involved with a particular NFT project. And if there's not a particular reason, don't do it. Don't do it. Okay. Don't be involved. Don't risk your money. And if you do risk any money, it should be money that you're comfortable losing.
All right. So the follow-up, I'm glad I let you give me an answer, because I do need to change how I'm phrasing the follow-up. Do you think that before the average person could really get into this, that we would need some sort of regulation and oversight?
I don't even know what that would look like. I would say people that have no risk tolerance still probably shouldn't. But, I mean, there definitely needs to be some sort of better vetting process. I mean, like, one of the things that OpenSea does is it'll give a blue check, you know, like a verified check for projects that meet whatever criteria it takes to get a blue check. And Apes doesn't have that blue check yet. And there are some specific reasons for that that are being addressed one at a time. For one thing, Apes is in flux. The creator is replacing mostly early apes with new ones that she has made through this whole swapping process. And it can be really confusing to an outsider. And I'm looking forward to that process being over, because the project needs this some stability in order to get the blue check, and the blue check is going to be necessary for some people to take it seriously, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In the meanwhile, I remain obsessed with the art. So, and I'm going to print some of these. My goal all along has been to pick five, and now I have way too many that I love, but to pick five and print them at Fracture Me on glass, where I've printed a lot of my photographs, and hang them in my hall. And I'm like super mm-hmm. excited about doing that. And that's what keeps me involved in the project. It is the art, right? So I don't know. I don't know what regulation looks like. It might have to be just like some form of self-vetting or a trade group that gets set up. But like, who's going to fund that? I don't know what, to your point, I don't know what actual regulation looks like. And for a lot of people, that probably means they should stay out of it.
Okay. And honestly, I had no idea what regulation would look like either. It was just, it was one of those things where I was like, should there be regulation? How would that work? And
what would it look like? And I don't have the answer to that. I mean, the crypto space, crypto maximalists like live in this fantasy world where, you know, crypto is going to free us from the government and like, you know, overthrow the banking system and just all kinds of things that are just nonsense. And I'm not one of those people. To me, for crypto to become mainstream, it means that it needs to be regulated in to one degree or another. And longtime listeners probably know that I feel like that there should always be tension between regulation and industry. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes it's going to go a little too far in one direction, and sometimes it's going to go a little too far in the other direction. But you need that tension to find the best balance that protects consumers and allows for competition too. And it allows for innovation too. And getting that magic level is super hard. And is, you know, it feels like it's just always an ongoing process. And we are way in the early days of crypto. So I don't know what that regulation is going to look like. I know that for cryptos to be considered financial instruments or products and services that can be used in the broader financial world, it's going to need to be some very specific banking-like regulations.
I'm with you on that. Because right now, from what I'm seeing, crypto doesn't look to me like money. It looks like using probably incredibly poor layman terms, it looks like something that you invest money in and then you take money back out and you do the transactions with real money while the crypto is acting like a security or a bond or a stock or you know something like that.
Is it?
Can anyone really answer that? I don't know.
There are certainly crypto transactions that could go that route, but at this point I think that the vast majority of crypto transactions are actually crypto transactions and not
as an intermediary
for fiat.
I figured out the question I want to ask.
Okay.
So thank you for helping me work through that.
You are welcome.
Should people consider crypto as something you actually spend?
Oh, that's a great question, man. It's a complete tangent to everything else we've talked about. But no. I mean, yes and no. Mostly no.
You're really helping.
So actually, to that question, unless you were buying your crypto for fiat right then and there, and then trading it right then and there for a product or a service, it makes almost no sense to be spending your crypto right now because the price is too volatile and it makes very little sense for most companies to accept crypto unless it's being immediately converted back into fiat value because we pay our bills with fiat. We're paying our bills with dollars or, you know, euros or, you know, whatever. But it's fiat currencies that pay our bills. And if you're accumulating payment for products and services for a cryptocurrency that then has a wildly different value tomorrow or next week or next month or a year from now, makes it very hard to do business. So, but at the same time, there are so-called stable cryptocurrencies, stable coins, where the value is artificially pegged to the dollar. So you get the benefits of being able to do a crypto transaction, like, you know, send it across the world in seconds and for, you know, next to nothing. And do so, and the value starts off as dollars and ends in dollars. And there's probably euro stable coins, but I don't actually know that to be the case. Oops, sorry, I'm not.
I would assume that that for stable coins, there's people out there that have set up stable coins for basically every currency, every fiat.
That would make sense. I mean, and there's also been the Celsius debacle of a few months ago. Celsius was a crypto project, and something went wrong, and it lost like all of its value essentially overnight, essentially in a few hours.
And it was supposed to be a stable coin.
There was a stable coin attached to it.
Okay.
Like sort of a side chain that was a stable coin that was and the value of one was tied to the value of the other. And
yeah, so the stable coin was basically backing Celsius. Right?
The other way around. Celsius was used to control the value of the stable coin.
Oh, okay. Okay. And that's the one that imploded. And
yeah, that's the one that imploded. A lot of people lost a lot of money, and that's really scary.
Yeah,
and that's where regulation may have actually helped. You know, they were basically trying to do some innovative things, it was a project where, you know, the best of intentions and solid technology still went wrong. At least that's what it appears to be. So, you know, that's the thing. If you have, you know, it's funny. I used to have a lot of Dogecoin. I had quite a bit of Dogecoin. And I started...
Such coin. Much money.
Exactly. And I started spending my Dogecoin on a game where you could buy packs in the game. And I was spending my Dogecoin as Dogecoin was increasing in value because I knew there was no possible way that value was sustainable. And so even though I was spending it on the way up, I still ended up, spending what in retrospect became, the pennies on the dollar. Because again, there was just no way that Dogecoin could maintain its value. Mind you, Dogecoin has since retreated significantly, but it's still worth way more than when I was actually spending on the way up. So that again, when you have cryptocurrencies with massive volatility, they do not make for a good medium of exchange. When an issue that Bitcoin has is that it takes too long. Like you could never can't go to a convenience store and buy a Coke for some Bitcoin because one, the way Bitcoin is set up, the transaction is going to cost too much and it's going to take 10, 20 minutes, maybe a couple of hours for that transaction to be approved. You can't do that. The Dogecoin is super fast. You could do it with Dogecoin. You could do it with Ethereum. You could do it with Cardano. There are really, really fast and cheap transaction cryptocurrencies out there, but their innate value still has a lot of volatility associated with it. So no, accumulating crypto and then spending it as a routine kind of thing we're not there yet. It's not really built for that.
Okay. So what I'm hearing is the crypto world and the NFT world, that's not for most people.
I don't think so. No, I'm an enthusiast. I'm a massive enthusiast. As anyone listening to this, if they're still listening, can tell.
Well, at least you have me.
Thank you. It's complicated. You have to take the time to understand what you're doing or you're at risk of, you know, making a mistake. And if you have that interest, you know, it's like, to me, cryptocurrency has been this amazing hobby that is paid.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's paid. I've enjoyed it. I've enjoyed some profits from it. I've got cryptos that are set up with staking rewards so that I get essentially passive income in the form of crypto for staking those cryptos.
I'll bite. What is staking cryptos?
Staking crypto, basically some cryptos have their system set up so that confirming transactions and maintaining the integrity of the network is done through units of that crypto being pledged for that purpose. And in exchange for doing so, they get essentially transaction rewards. Does that make sense?
Okay. So not the same as the crypto miners.
No, so crypto mining, where it's hardware mining, right? Most of us have heard the stories about Bitcoin mining, like using something like 1% of the world's electricity production, which is insane.
That's a lot of electricity.
Yes. That's a proof of work system, to where you throw computers at the problem. They're all competing to solve the encryption math that maintains the integrity of the network, maintains the integrity of transactions. Those are proof of work systems that scale according to how many computers are thrown at them. Right? They're proof of stake.
And how many graphics cards are thrown at them.
Yeah, right. Computers and graphic cards, or, you know, ASICs or whatever. With proof of stake systems, you take the proof of work out, and instead you have people who have either a certain amount of the cryptocurrency themselves, or like in the case of Cardano, they've got this great staking system where I can pledge my Cardano to a staking pool all through the blockchain itself, and my Cardano never leaves my wallet. So I maintain ownership the entire time. I could send or sell that Cardano anytime I wanted, and I don't need to trust anyone else. Like it's all controlled by the blockchain. And as my staking pool wins the opportunity to do the math during what are called epochs, which, you know, small blocks of time, my staking pool gets a reward for that epoch if they find a block, and then every person who's pledged their Cardano to that staking pool shares in those rewards, and it's all automatic. And again, it's trustless. You don't need to trust anybody. So and my point there, what was my point? Do I have a point?
Your point was to answer my question. What is staking?
Right. So in the words of, what's his name from SNL? Crypto been very, very good to me.
Oh my God, this dates us because I can picture,
of course you can. It's Garrett Morris.
Crypto been very good to me. Yes. He was playing, an immigrant baseball player character.
Chico Escuela.
Thank you.
Chico Escuela. Garrett Morris, SNL in the late 70s. Good stuff. Anyway, crypto's been very, very good to me, and I appreciate that.
Brian and I watched that in reruns, just so everyone knows.
Sure.
Thank you for rolling with that.
But I have a passion for this, and I've thrown myself into it. And by the way, I've lost some money. I recently bought a couple of cryptos that were pump and dumps, just like, you know, just garbage projects, and I should have known better. Shouldn't have. And basically, I've lost a small amount of Ethereum on those. I also fell for a scam, a Link scam, There are so many. One of the things we haven't talked about is how fraudsters are attracted to the space, not just in creating NFT projects, but in trying to trick people with phishing scams or with maliciously made smart contracts that can steal your wallet, which is probably what happened to Seth Green. They can, like, you know, just remove, like, basically there's a way of making a smart contract that if you end up opening a particular web page, it will ask your okay to do something that it may be disguised what they're asking, but what you're really giving them permission to do is transfer whatever they want out of your wallet.
So now a scam like this, a phishing scam.
Yeah. That's not a phishing
scam. This is not a phishing scam. You are correct. But a scam where you are tricked into handing over the contents of your NFT portfolio. This is not like the crappy text messages and emails people are getting where it's like, Nigerian prince, need your help. Give us your bank account number so we can... Because we can transfer 50 million US. This is stuff that looks straight up legit.
Well, kind of. I had one thing that I fell victim to in the Apes Discord, AIPES, the Apes Discord, this scumbag bottom feeder created a fake Apes project on OpenSea. OpenSea, again, is the marketplace for NFTs, the main marketplace for NFTs. It's not the only one. And, he set it up where this fake collection was called Apes NFT, but it used either an L or a pipe for the I.
Oh, so visually it looked correct, even though it wasn't.
There, I had enough information to avoid this. Right. For instance, there was no sales volume on this fake collection because it's a fake collection. Right. There were only two NFTs in this project, even though the Apes project has 11,000 NFTs. I had enough information, but I got so excited because I wanted this one animated ape. And he was like, LOL, this guy must not like the project. And I can't believe this is only listed for such and such. So I clicked through and bought it. And it was a legitimate purchase for a collection on OpenSea. It was just a fake collection of where the image, the $12,000 JPEG, and in this case, it was a tens of dollars JPEG, had been stolen, or actually an animated GIF, but that's also another issue. So I fell for that. I fell for it, and I bought it. And you know, he tried it again later, too. He tried to do it a few times. And there's things like that, but then there's also projects... Like, so one of the things that I've encountered is you get random NFTs sent to your wallet all the time because, you know, all the stuff are open ledgers. So the bad guys can look through all the various smart contracts and see which wallets, which Ethereum addresses in this case, have purchased NFTs. And then they can send you an NFT without your permission. And some of them are advertisements. They're just spam. They're literal spam. Some of them are,
of course,
malicious projects. Some of them are advertisements for, like, hey, if you're in the New York City for this event, make sure you come by such and such, right? That kind of spam. Or, hey, we're doing an NFT project. Come mint one, right? There's that kind of spam too. But then there's also, like, I got this NFT for a supposed game, and there was an offer, a third party offer on this NFT sent to me without my permission when I got it. So it was the bad guys put in an offer on OpenSea for their own NFT, sent that NFT for me. And then when I open that NFT, I see that there's an offer. So I want to go collect on that offer. It's like, heck yeah, it's free money. But in order to sell the NFT, the smart contract is set up that you need some other NFTs too. And if you click through to those other NFTs, those are malicious ones that are trying to get into your wallet.
What a hot mess.
Because they're not on OpenSea. They're being hosted on external websites. And then there's also mechanisms where people have done a so-called free mint. A mint is when you create, when you first create an NFT, or when you, like, no one has ever bought this NFT and then you buy it, you're minting it, right? And so the projects will do free mintings, but those free mints use a smart contract that, again, is designed to loot your wallet. So you have to watch out for that too. So again, if you're going to get involved in this stuff, you need to have the interest to do your homework and to know what you're doing. And if you don't have that interest, don't get involved. Go gamble somewhere else. And I see people referring to, like, the money they put into an NFT as an investment. And I personally sharply reject that terminology. It's a gamble.
So that would be like saying playing slot machines is an investment.
Yeah, I'm going to go invest $10 in slot machines. No, that's not quite a perfect analogy from the standpoint of, if you play a slot machine long enough, you will go broke because of the house edge. Right.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe I'm going to go invest in blackjack.
Well, no, that's another one. If you play it long enough, you'll go broke because there's a house edge.
Yeah. Well, come on. You're totally ruining my really clever analogies here.
I know, with my facts and math and stuff.
See, once again, you and your facts and reality getting in the way of me being clever.
But if you do have that interest, do your research, get involved. You know, one of the things is, so most NFT projects have a Discord server. And if you get onto one of those servers, you'll have fraudsters trying to send you fraudulent links through DMs, direct messages. So, like, if you're going to join a Discord server, you should immediately turn off private messages so that only someone where you've connected as a friend can send you a private message. You should do that. You're like, 100%.
That sounds like really good advice.
If you're going to join an NFT Discord, do that. Actually, if you're going to join a gaming Discord, do that. Because you can still send a friend request. Anyone can send a friend request to you. And if you accept that friend request, or they accept that friend request, then you can direct message each other. And that's as it should be. But you want to keep the randos from being able to randomly send you private messages, because that's one area where fraudsters try to play.
Okay. I'm convinced that the average person should not be involved in the NFT world.
Unless they have the interest to do the work.
Yeah, well, at that point, they're not the average person anymore, because now they've switched over to someone with interest, and now they're doing their homework, and they're learning, and
hopefully playing with money that they can afford to lose.
And they're playing with money they can afford to lose. Good point.
You know, and I think that there are some the NFT games that are really interesting. Again, with apes, it's the art. And hopefully, you know, I hope that when you guys, I hope you'll look at the show notes and you'll see the images that of some of my favorite apes. And I hope that it blows you away. But, you know, art is very subjective, and you might like it or you might not like it. And I hope that people find it interesting. And if you want to be able to roll with celebrities and super rich people and whatnot, maybe Bay Area, I keep doing that. It's BAYC for Bored Ape Yacht Club. And then I transpose that into Bay Area every single freaking time on my mind. So
well, maybe you should start an NFT that's Bay Area. Let's call it Baba. Bay Area Brian's art.
You know what I should do? I should do a Mason Truman art NFT project.
That's exactly what I was visualizing. That's going to be it's going to be Baba. So Bay Area
sometimes,
Brian art.
Sometimes
and it's Mason.
His hand will have six fingers. and sometimes and four, and sometimes five.
He has a hat.
And then he has it. Well, unless he doesn't. Maybe the hats will be the rare ones.
Those would be the rare ones. Okay, I'll accept that.
By the way,
I know you told me earlier not to say it, but here I am anyhow. I really like your art.
That's so ridiculous. I got a full request on my novel when I got back. Like, I was out of town for 3 days.
That's fantastic.
And I got back, and then waiting in my email box was a full request. So I'm very excited about that.
That's fantastic. And people, I am so excited for all of you to have the opportunity to read Brian's book whenever it's actually published.
And if I self-publish, maybe I'll do it as an NFT. You never know.
Yeah, there you go.
I'll do special editions NFT. The rest of them will be on Amazon and iBooks.
Because some of us will want to have a physical copy of your book.
If I self-publish, that doesn't seem likely, does it?
Oh, you can totally self-publish and have Dead Tree versions. Amazon does that. Like it's print on demand.
Yeah, worth every penny. All right, listen, we have gone way over. I want to thank LinkedIn Jobs. Right,
you can post LinkedIn Jobs.
You can post your job for free. Once again, LinkedIn.com/ACM. That's LinkedIn. .com/ACM. Post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. We appreciate them sponsoring the show. And let me do this, Jeff. And then let me say something like, that is this week's Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us over at contextmachine.io. You can catch us on Twitter at Context Machine. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom, recorded for us.
Yes. You're doing great, Brian. I believe in you. Keep going.
You were so easily hoodwinked. Hey, Jeff, that's all for this week, man.
Oh, thank God. I mean, okay.
All right. Cheers.
I love your art.